Welcome to the Color and Ceramics Podcast. I'm Bob Acton, your host, and I'm very pleased that you're here today to share in my conversation with Karen Adams from Lush Brush Studios. Karen is a sculptor and painter based in Roswell, Georgia, in the United States. She was early into art as a child, taking art classes at the Children's Museum in Nashville. She then went on to receive her BFA and MFA from the University of Georgia. She also studied at Montana State in Bozeman and in Cortona, Italy. She does some lovely sculptures using multimedia and found objects, and you can find her website and Instagram sites in the show notes. I hope you enjoy the show. Karen, thanks so much for joining us today on the Color and Ceramics Podcast. I'm excited to have you here.
Oh, I'm delighted to be here. I really am. Appreciate you choosing me.
Oh, well, it was great. I follow you on Instagram and see some of the work that you do, and I love some of your sculptures, and I know you do a lot of painting, so I thought this might be a great opportunity to talk with you about your work and find out how you do it and to share some of those ideas with our listeners.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Fire away.
So, I bet you that you didn't start last week and that you have been at this for a little while. I wonder if you could tell us a little bit about your journey to where you got to today.
So if you're speaking about ceramics, and I am a newbie relatively, it's only been about 10 years that I've been working in ceramics. Before that, it was all strictly 2D figurative. But what happened, Bob, is I just became so obsessed with the figure that I needed another way to describe it. I was running through all the possibilities on paper and canvas. And I decided the light bulb went off over my head. And I said, that's it. I've got to learn how to sculpt. So I immediately found out about a sculpting class. Not too far away. And I signed up for that class. And that was 10 years ago.
Wow. Well, that is quite a bit of time, though, Karen. That's not like you started last week. So you've been at it for a while, sounds like.
Well, 10 years to me feels short, because I think about my whole artistic journey. And I really started when I was 5. So that's been almost 60 years. So
yeah. Very cool. Very cool. So can you tell people a little bit about some of the sculptures that you're doing and how you think about that and what's exciting you these days about your work?
So I'm very excited about a series I'm working on now that began 3 years ago with drawings. I had a woman reach out to me from England. She's a composer. And she was composing a ballet, and she wanted to know if I would storyboard for her. And her whole story was about fairies. And I was like, okay, I can try to do this. Well, the more she wrote, the more she told me about, the more I drew, the more excited I was about these fairies. And I started incorporating them into my own work. These drawings were specifically for her. But later on, I incorporated the fairy imagery into my own work, and I realized that I could use the fairies to be these archetypes of people. And I am just having the best time with that.
Very cool. So tell us more about these archetypes and how you work in those ideas.
Okay. So one of my first fairies was Kit the Fairy. And Kit, I created a personality for her. She is a 13-year-old fairy, and she's very cranky. And a lot of people don't know this, but 13-year-old fairy girls molt their arms and wings. And so she's at this period of time where she can't really fly. She doesn't have any arms. And so there is limitations in her life, and it's scary to her, but she's a strong fairy and she will get through this. So she started the idea of creating, like I said, these archetypes of strong women. Now I have branched out. I've done one male fairy, and he is Kit's little brother, Sam. And Sam is rambunctious. He's 9 years old. He runs around with no shirt on, and his pants are always falling. His butt crack shows, and he just gets into trouble. And he is sticking his tongue out at his sister all the time, and everybody he comes into contact with. So I've created these people that I hope that a viewer can see a little bit of themselves and like, oh yeah, I remember when I felt like I couldn't do anything. I felt very constrained. Or, oh, I remember when I was a rambunctious little boy and nothing mattered and I was fearless. So
Absolutely.
that's kind of the idea.
Yeah, that is fun. I know lots of times when people look at some of my work, they have many different reactions to it, right? Some like it, some don't like it, some have thoughts about the pieces that had never entered my mind. And I bet you have the same kind of reaction to your work.
Absolutely, absolutely. And it's always been that way. When I was a painter, my paintings were figurative, but they were somewhat abstracted. And so it was open to a lot of different interpretation. And these are as well, definitely.
Yeah. What are you hoping for when people see your work, particularly these ceramic sculptures that you've been working on?
I really just want them to enjoy the work in whatever way they can. Like I said, if it triggers a memory of their own, I love that. I love it when I can make a connection. Somebody can connect with my sculpture. Whatever connection they have, whatever, yeah.
Yeah, cool. Have you a story that you'd like to share of a person who had a reaction to one of your pieces that really you liked?
I will share this. I have a sculpture, and his name is Shellheart. And he came before the fairy series, but in hindsight, when you look at things, you realize, well, he had some fairy qualities about him. Anyway, he's quite beautiful. He's a beautiful specimen of a man, and he has a beautiful face. And my sister-in-law was at the exhibition where he was being shown, and she walked up to him and kissed him on his little ceramic lips. She said, "He is wanting me to do this." I have, and I said, "Well, you just have at." So that tickled me to no end. That was just delightful. And I love it when I don't mind people touching my sculptures, period. Because I don't want to say no. Reach out and see what that texture feels like. Does it feel like you expected it would? What does that shiny shell feel like?
Right on. So that sounds interesting. I can see a couple of pieces behind you because we're doing this with a video, this interview with a video. And of course, people are going to only listen to this by audio. Can you tell people a little bit about how you do your work? Like, what kind of materials do you use and how do you form your work and so on?
So I have found that I really enjoy B-mix clay. It is low grog, no grog, and very smooth and very forgiving and very flexible. So that's where I usually start. And in the last few years, I've been incorporating found objects with my sculpture. I really enjoy mixed media. It just if I can put a brass horse in my sculpture that I've found at a flea market instead of making a ceramic horse and painting him brass, I'm going to do that. I like mixing the textures. So it's gotten me into trouble a time or two because I don't have welding skills. I don't have tools for cutting wood. I have just very rudimentary things. So I've expanded my friend group to include a welder and a woodworker. And
Yeah.
so when I get into trouble, I call up my friends and I say, "Hey, I don't have the equipment. Can I come over and show you what I want? Can you help me out?"
Yeah.
And thank God for friends.
Thank God for friends is right. Thank God for friends with tools, I guess, is
That's
what you're talking about.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So when you first contacted me, Bob, I was thinking about color. And I started thinking about, when we're children, we're given toys with primary colors and bright things to stimulate us, our parents think, right? So we all kind of started off with that. And I really, color always resonated with me as a small child. And I like to think the turning point happened when Santa Claus brought me a chalkboard with colored chalks. And then I started realizing I can make things with color. And then time went on and pivotal for me. Two films, The Wizard of Oz and Dr. Seuss, The Grinch Who Stole Christmas, the original cartoon version. The brilliance of those colors, and I was, 4 or 5, 6 year old child, and I was just so, I wanted to live in those worlds of color. And I thought about it and I realized I've just been spending my life trying to live in those worlds of color. That's what I'm doing. I'm
Very
living
good.
in worlds of color that I create.
That is great. I think color is really interesting because it's we as you know with your sculptures, you really need to marry together the form that you're using and the color that you've decided to work the surface with.
Right.
Yeah, how do you think about that? How do you think about color
So,
and form?
well, let's go back to Greco-Roman sculptures that's survived all these centuries, and they're in their late form with no color on them. I remember when I found out these beautiful, gorgeous white sculptures had been painted, and I was appalled when I learned it in art history class. And now I'm so fascinated, and I wish I knew what they looked like, with their prior color. So I start out, and I've got this bisque-fired piece that is kind of a creamy white. And I usually start with a latex base of a medium gray because I don't know where I'm going. But it's the same psychology as when I would tint a canvas before I'd paint it. I never painted on a white canvas. I would put a layer of transparent color because there's something daunting about an empty white canvas, and there is something daunting about painting a white sculpture. So that's where I start, is with a medium gray latex color. And then, as I live with it, I walk through my studio. I work on several pieces at a time. And I let them sit there until they tell me what I'm supposed to do next.
It is true, eh? I mean, I think that I've experienced that as well with some of my work, is that sometimes the best stuff is when I've taken my time and let it sit there a little bit and I've looked at it over and over and then it seems to come to me. Is that what you're talking about that
That
happens
is
for you?
exactly what you're talking about, but also the reverse can be true. I remember with Kit the fairy, I knew that I did not want her lower legs to all be ceramic, but so I had one ceramic leg going all the way down and one cropped at the knee, and I could not figure out. And I, days went by, a couple of weeks went by, we were working on a couple of months going by, and I said, "This is bullshit. I have got to, today, I'm going to create this lower leg." And I went out in my backyard and I picked up a tree limb and brought it in, and that became her lower leg. And I just got the ball rolling. I think it's the hardest thing as an artist to gauge when to roll and when to back off It's just the hardest. It's the hardest thing to gauge. I was working on a sculpture and a beautiful woman and really gorgeous face and hair up in the air and lots of movement. And I had put the primer on her and then I painted white on top of the primer. And it just came to me that I needed to put black stripes on her. And I thought, am I going to ruin this? I'm going to put blacks. And I thought, you can't even go there. You cannot just do it. And if you don't like it, you can do something different. But I did the black stripe because that my gut was saying, you got to do these black stripes. And I did it. And I was so glad I did.
Yeah.
And it pleased me.
It's
If
very
it doesn't
interesting.
please, go ahead.
No, I was going to say that it's interesting that that internal dialogue, that conversation that we have with ourselves, can either take us down the path of the letting the stripes go on the piece, or we can pull back and restrict that and decide not to do that for some reason. And it sounds like you have a lot of those conversations with yourself
I
in the
do. I do. And it's just a matter, it's a whimsical thing, as you know. It when you get in the flow, you cannot predict it. You can have everything set up. You can have your clay right there. You can have all your pieces and you can have your music going and be very stimulated to work, and it just doesn't come through for you. And then some days you'll just pop in and be in a rush and something comes to you. So it's hard working that intuitively. But it's the only thing that makes me happy ultimately with the pieces that I create. I learned about making maquettes before making a sculpture, making these little 6, 7, 8 inch tall maquettes. And I've done that. And it was helpful, but I can't do that now because I need to know that that process is unpredictable. I can't take a little miniature and blow it up because I know what it's gonna, I can't know what it's gonna look like at the end when I start a piece. I
It's
have to
really,
be surprised.
yeah, like that's really interesting. I interviewed somebody a couple of weeks ago who had the exact opposite approach. His approach was to, he thinks about it and thinks about it and thinks about it until it all is ready in his mind about what the final piece will be, and then he makes it. And you are the complete opposite of that, it sounds like, or at least on the other end of the continuum. And
I am, but I do know sculptors that work that way. I was fortunate enough to be at Buffalo Creek Art Center in Gardnerville, Nevada, a few years ago, doing a residency. And I was with another sculptor who was a metal worker, large scale outdoor sculptures, monumental things. And he had to work that way. He could not work intuitively. He had to have drawings and calculations and mathematics all ready to go. And, that's more power to him. Thank God we're all different.
Absolutely. I've got a bunch of questions here for you. One has to do with some ideas you might have for another ceramic artist or artist who might struggle with that a little bit, with the notion of I should do it this way, the classic should word, and how a person might overcome that and tap into that intuitive thinking that you're talking about.
You know, it is hard. You kind of have to trust yourself. I think one of the ways that when I feel stuck, that I will help my situation is I will draw where I'm at in the sculpture. I do a lot of photographs. I take the sculpture in different lighting and just moving it around, I can get some ideas. I mean, being stuck is no fun. I have Aria, the tiger fairy, who I was creating, and I knew she was going to be a strong-willed mid-teen, late-teen young girl. But she was coming off. I needed her to appear to be shy, but she needed to know that her inner strength was there. So I just fortunately, it popped into my head. I needed to have a tiger coming out of her abdomen to show that she had this strength. So I went walking around a flea market until I found a little brass tiger that would fit my sculpture. So you just everybody's got to pick their own solutions. It's just like, what do you do when you get anxious? Well, I listen to music, I take a walk. I think all of that applies when you get stuck with art. Listen to music, take a walk, do a drawing, get away from it, get up next to it.
Yeah, for sure. Because I think that the word should, that we can get wrapped up in, takes away from that creativity. It blocks that ability to pay attention to those inner ideas that we have about
It
our
does.
work.
It's self-editing,
Yeah.
and it's one of the worst habits you can get into. I just recently have started writing and writing about my art, and that has not ever been one of my genres, writing particularly. But I wanted to do it because I knew it would give me insight, and I'm really enjoying it, and it's hard for me to tell myself, oh, that sentence sounds stupid. Let's go back and erase that and do another one. Just keep the flow going. Just keep it going. Just keep it moving and then edit later. So we all have to figure out little things to help us, over the hump.
Yeah, absolutely. I remember taking a creative writing class years ago, and the instructor had us start to write. We couldn't remove the pen or pencil from the paper,
Brilliant.
and we couldn't erase anything or draw a line through it or anything. We just had to keep going, and it was amazing to me what came out
Yeah.
of that experience. Because I think probably traditionally, I would have been like what you were talking about. Oh, no, that's not good enough. And I would have been editing as I was trying to let the ideas out.
Right.
Hey, it seems to me that people who, as we're talking, who are moving into being able to be intuitive and in touch with those feelings and ideas and be able to allow that into their art, they need to have enough technical skills, I would bet, to be able to let that happen in a way that's helpful for them. What, have you got any
Yes.
idea? What do you think about that? Do you think that's true?
Well, I do think there's truth in that. I mean, certainly there are uneducated or unschooled artists that are, do great works, but like for me, I think it was a lot easier going into sculpture 10 years ago because I had this huge background of drawing the figure. That made it so much easier than anybody starting from the ground up in ceramics. I think that helped me a lot. But like I'll give you an example. I'm scared to death of glazes, scared to death of them. I told myself, I said, all right, I'm going to learn how to sculpt in clay, but I'm never going to learn glazes because that's a whole nother ball game. It's too much of a learning curve. I want to concentrate on the form. So that's what I've done. And I know how to oil paint. So I cold finish all of my sculptures with oil paint. And some of them are acrylic and some of them have wax on them. I just knew that I wanted to know enough to get as far as I could get with the ceramics and not bother with the, because I remember taking a class in college, and I sucked. I was no good as a 18-year-old college student in ceramics class. I had no skills. I never could get the hang of throwing on the wheel. The only thing that I got the hang of was hand building, and I actually created a swimming pool with three different swimmers that you could move around like pieces on a chessboard in the pool. And I painted them with acrylic. So I guess I kind of went back to what I didn't know to do.
Well, I guess it really doesn't matter, does it? There are no rules around these kinds of things. And if you're able to accomplish what you want with acrylics, then you don't need glazes or underglazes as you work with
Absolutely.
them. Yeah.
Absolutely.
But you do need to know how to work with clay because your pieces are going in the kiln and you
That's
need to
right.
know how to put it together and create the form that you're interested in and the muscle structure and so on that's important for you.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. The biggest thing that I had to learn about working with clay was measuring the amount of moisture in the clay and knowing what level of moisture can do what. And what I can do when the clay is at that level. So that was the biggest learning curve for me. I remember taking a workshop and building this nice big male torso and getting ready to add the head, and the torso started just sinking. It was too soft, and I couldn't, it was just melting into itself. Like, okay, that was a big learning point for me. Okay, you cannot build up until, and I learned about how different sections can be almost dry and different sections can be very damp, and you can work it that way, and you learn how to work your plastic and but yeah, and there's you just have to get in there and do it. You just have to get in there,
Yeah, I
learn.
think that's been a, as I've asked many people who I've interviewed, what advice might you have for somebody? And they almost everybody says, just go and do it. You got to work at it. And I think working with people around you is important, so you can get some feedback from people about how you're doing your things. How does that fit for
Definitely.
your practice?
For me, I'm fortunate enough to have a couple of artist friends that live not too far from me in the Atlanta area. And we get together and discuss our art, go to each other's studios. I also get so much, I don't know why I feel embarrassed to say this, but the people I've met on Instagram, the artists that I've connected with on Instagram, I have learned so much from them. Just watching their journeys, and I'm so grateful for them. I feel like, I mean, that is a community that I was able to tap into, and I don't know that everybody feels that way, but I'm very grateful for the people in that community.
Yeah. Now, do you engage with people in that com in the Instagram community where you can get feedback about each other's work and talk with each other like you
Oh,
do your friends in
absolutely.
Atlanta? Yeah. Awesome.
Absolutely. People all over the world. Yeah, it's wonderful. I mean, you found me there. Thank you,
Yeah.
Bob.
I did. I did. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And
Absolutely.
I enjoyed, your recent post about color and your animal and your choice of color. And I was like, yeah, you go, Bob. You went with your gut. That's the way to do it.
Yeah, I did, and I was pretty happy. And I think that really fits with what you're talking about, is really paying attention to that intuitive piece for yourself.
It is. It is. And the buzz for me, and it is a buzz, is working and feeling that I'm going in the direction that the sculpture wants me to go, and it's coming to, and I don't know what it's going to look like at the end. I don't know. And that, even though it's a struggle, it can be a struggle. That's the biggest buzz of all, is that you don't know where it's going, and then you just learn all about it and all about yourself when it's done.
Very cool. Hey,
Yeah.
now, I bet you've had a challenge or two in your art career. What's a challenge that you've experienced, and how did you overcome it?
So most recently, we'll just go with that because the jury's still out on how I've overcome it, if I overcome it. I really do want to branch out more into metals, and I'm interested in welding. So I went to Penland School of Craft 2 summers ago and took a metals workshop. I learned about MIG welding, TIG welding, forging, cold forging, and it was just enough to let me know that I want to do this, but I don't. So once again, 10 years ago, I said, okay, I've got to learn clay. I've got to learn it. And I'm going to, by God, learn it. So I did. So now I'm like, I really want to learn metal. I really want to know about this metal because I want my sculptures to be metal and ceramic and whatever else I want to throw in there. So I'm in a quandary right now as to how I'm going to go forward with that. Am I going to go to a technical school and take a welding class? Am I going to break down and get a MIG welder, have it out in the shed with my kiln? So that, I mean, that's an immediate thing that I'm still wrestling with.
It's a journey, eh? And being able to decide which path to go down when you're, I sort of think about being out in the forest with different paths we can choose to go down. And that's what I hear you talking about is I'm not sure if I should go left or right with this one. And you're at that spot of trying to figure that out.
Absolutely, absolutely. One little story anecdote I wanted to share with you. It's very personal and special to me, is that I was working on a self-portrait and in clay, and it was taking me forever. It was just monumental. There were mental hurdles to get over and all kinds of things. And so it took quite a while, and I went to Jekyll Island, Georgia, which is a place I used to go as a child, on my birthday. And this is something I try to do annually, and it's in February, so it's cold at the beach, and it's not, you're not out there in your bikini, you're out there in your sweatshirt and your jeans, and you're just walking around. So I went to the place where we used to stay when I was a child, called the Buccaneer Motel. It had been raised many years ago, and it's where I learned to swim. And I walked around. There's no development now. It had been raised years ago, and I went in, crept in through the chain link fence, got it all blocked off. And I started walking around, and I looked on the ground, and the ground was kind of, sandy but dark with plant matter. And I saw something turquoise shining, and I bent down to pick it up, and it was a piece of tile from the swimming pool that had been raised and been demolished. And I walked around, and I found several more pieces of tile. They're all cracked and broken. None of them are very big, but I collected them. I went back the next year. I did the same thing because, more storms move in, sand shifts. And I added those to my self-portrait sculpture, and it was the missing personal link that I needed, and I didn't know that I needed it. And I still have several pieces of those tiles, and I occasionally add them to other pieces of sculpture just as a pop of color, just a pop of me, little whimsical Karen from the swimming pool.
Wow, that is very cool. I love that idea of going out and searching out in the wild, I'll call it, even though it might not be that wild, and finding little bits, and there you found a little bit of you out there.
I did, and it just felt very magical. And I don't think a lot of people are as intuitive, maybe. Artists are more intuitive than your average person walking down the street. Another artist would think of that, but it just, a mechanic or a, I don't know, a telephone operator. I don't know,
I know what you mean. Maybe a fairy had put those pieces there for you.
It was that magical. It was. And I think there's something, as I'm talking to you, I'm realizing this. There is something about me as an artist that wants to tap into that childlike wonder. And I think that is probably something that I want the viewer to see when they see my fairies. Oh, fairies. Yeah, I remember fairy tales when I was a kid. Oh, but look at this. This is a cool fairy. I can relate to this fairy. So I don't know. I guess maybe there's a little bit of that going on. Me
Yeah.
trying to get the viewer to get in touch with something childlike in them, magical. Color is magic.
Yes, absolutely.
And
And
magic is color.
yeah, for sure. Hey, I was going to ask you about your color. We didn't get to that. How do you choose your colors? Because sometimes a person could choose muted colors. They could choose really bright, vivid colors, like your Dr. Seuss movie that stimulated you.
Right,
What
right.
how do you how what do you what are you thinking about your colors these days when you're doing your fairies, for example?
My tendency is always to go toward brighter colors. I am, if I had, I kind of thought, I wonder if Bob's going to ask me who my favorite artist all time is. And I thought, if he does, I'm going to tell him Marc Chagall, because he was such a brilliant painter, drawer, draftsman, ceramicist, even, and colorist. And so I'm always, my palette is always going to want to go bright. I'm going to have to struggle to force some neutrals in there, and something might act as a neutral that other people would call a bright color. But I'm always going to go for the brighter. That's just my palette. It just is. Dr. Seuss and The Wizard of Oz are my palette.
You know, it's very interesting that you've got this notion of truly being yourself, Karen, and really tapping into that intuitive side for you is really important. I was wondering if you had any thoughts or advice you might have for other ceramic artists out there who might be listening to this. What might you encourage them to do to grow and get moving on their journey?
Just I to grow, well, learning is growing, right? So if there's something you want to do that you don't know how to do, go take a class in it. If I all of a sudden wanted to incorporate hand-thrown work into my sculpture, I would force myself to go learn how to throw a pot, you know. Don't be afraid to learn, and don't be afraid to experiment. And dear God, please don't listen to those bad voices in your head that are telling you, why are you doing this? It doesn't matter to anybody. You got to shut those voices out.
Right on, right on. Karen, thanks so much for being with us here today. I've really enjoyed having this
Oh.
conversation with you. I think some of your ideas around this intuitive part for you and paying attention to what's important for you and how you know what you want to do and to feel comfortable with that is, those are really great ideas for people who
Thank
are,
you. And
yeah.
you know, one more thing I would say is learn from the artists that you love, whether they're from history or they're on Instagram. I learn every day that I scroll through Instagram and look at my artist friends. I'm learning. That is continuing education for me.
Yeah.
So that's I think that's incredibly important. And I do get out and go to shows as well. So, yeah.
Yeah, there's lots of ways for us to connect with artists. And I know when I'm on Instagram or in a gallery or a museum somewhere, I'm often asking, I wonder how they did that. I wonder why they did what they did, right? And
Yeah.
that stimulates, for me anyway, the whole notion of learning and getting better at what we do.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm so glad you reached out to me. Thank you so much, Bob.
You're most
Enjoyed
welcome. It's
talking
been,
with you.
yeah, I enjoyed talking with you too, so thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to the Color and Ceramics Podcast with Bob Acton and his guests. Please help others find the podcast by subscribing to this podcast wherever you find your podcasts, such as iTunes, Spotify, Amazon Music, YouTube, or other podcatchers. And don't forget to give us a review. We'll see you next time.